In many ways, the various titles of this month's Sunday presentations have readied us, have brought us to this moment together. Detaching from lower desires, developing wisdom and compassion, spiritual rebirth. This theosophical moment is very different from the popular culture's concepts of awakening spiritual consciousness and approaching the deific. In general society, so many are content to imagine an anthropomorphic God. They imagine hell to be knocking on heaven's doors in the pursuit of individual salvation. Blind faith in dogma and creeds and the practice of rituals too often lead to fanaticism and even the violence of causeless hate. And all this that we observe is despite the fact that the major world religions share the roots of theosophical verities. They share the concept of an unknowable deific force or essence. They share the concept of the heaven state, the kingdom of heaven, being within each being. They often share the concept that each being can pray within the closet of the heart to approach the kingdom of heaven. All these verities can be found worldwide, and they can be followed. As students of theosophy, how might we envision the process of attuning to the universal consciousness for ourselves? Collectively, individually. Well, we might consider the process of how an individual bead of mercury merges seamlessly and peacefully into the host of its kind. We might consider the process of how a drop of water joins the larger body of water equally naturally. These analogous earthly PowerPoints give us the sense that we need to master the space within us rather than attempting to master the space around us. The philosophy offers the proposal that our individual efforts to attune to universal spirituality of consciousness needs to be based upon the declared intent to fit ourselves by study and otherwise to be better able to serve others, all others, to serve the all. We're not to go knocking on heaven's doors. It's not someplace far away. We're not to force our personal energies on the host or collection of souls with whom we aspire to associate or with whom we aspire to work. Ambitious, zealous drives to correct or adjust external forms is not attuning harmoniously and impersonally with the transitory collectives around us. And it is certainly not the way to universal consciousness, a far loftier spiritual state of being. So many times, this effort seems daunting. The Americanization of mind teaches drivers, they're almost instilled in us from birth. Work harder, work faster. Work perfectly, work relentlessly, and do it all, accomplish it all yesterday. If we allow such thinking to prevail, there can be an experience of the paralysis by analysis. There can be a fear of either failure or fear of success. And certainly, there can be the escapism of procrastination to the nth degree. So let's recall that little bead of mercury achieving a seamless, apparently effortless reunion with a pool of its own kind. What can we take from that analogy when considering a day in the life? A mindful moment. Endeavoring to become at one with the all. To become selfless. Universally conscious. Well, we're to bloom where we are planted. We can build the reality within that naught can ruffle. Available to each of us immediately are certain powers of mind, as soul, as radiance of the universal unknowable. We are conscious. More, we are self-conscious. We know what it is to be rational. We know what it is to reason from premise to conclusion. To experience life, to observe, and then to assimilate the puzzle pieces of the knowledge gained into a brand new reality. We know what it is to raise the mundane to spiritual heights, to transmute. We can follow the traditions of Pythagoras and Plato, using principles and fundamental truths to discern right from wrong, to learn from all opportunities how best to serve. To attune to the universal consciousness is merely to choose to merge into it as a point of view or sustained attitude. We can use the conditioned mind and brain at our avail to question, to ponder, to observe, to expand our thinking. We can lean within to draw spirit to the fore. Why? Because thought is the very plane of action. Thought is what we can generate to create harmony in thought, word, and deed. Thought is what we can generate to create moments of namaste in the sphere of the influence available to us. In questioning, oh, we can question. We're advised to remain open-minded, open-hearted as best we can 24/7. And we question. The eternal pilgrim, the soul we truly are, observes the mask of the incarnation and endeavors the ultimate metacognition within that mask of conditions, through questioning. How did I just see or visualize or imagine the nature of self in all capitals in that encounter or that transaction I just experienced? Was I acting from the highest self in a universal manner? Or was I acting from a finite idea of self in all lower cases, in a very narrow, particularized, pointed sense? What was my motive in that thought or series of thoughts? Was it to create and sustain commonality with the so-called other? Or was I thinking from the basis of separatism? How mixed was that motive? Was I perpetuating the truth of universal consciousness shared with all other beings, with all other beingness, or did I just void that concept? In my zeal to fix a scenario because I, the personality, know best or better than the tradition or the others who have come before me, was I actually serving, or was I being self-centered, closed-minded, resistant, close-hearted, maybe even close-fisted? Where is the line between independently relying on the highest idea of this, the higher power within? Where's the line between that and just being plain old stubborn? To attune to universal consciousness, we merely have to pause and take the time to ask ourselves a question or two, to re-anchor. When and how should we be doing that? Well, that powerful pause is to be determined by each individual self-conscious being using the skandhas at their avail, using the opportunities they have karmically. We do have advice from ancient and modern times. We have advice from the masters that have walked this path before us and have left a trail of clues from which we can begin to build that process that we need to have to become all we can be. At dawn and dusk, upon rising and retiring, each one of us can establish a routine of calming the body and the brain in order to retreat into heart and mind, to turn inward. Intentional consciousness for any one day can begin and end with planned meditation. To set aside the regrets of the past, to set aside the concerns for the future, to attend to the tiniest of whisperings of the voice of the silence, our conscience. Whether the voice comes from the dreams in the night before, or whether it comes in the recollections of the day just lived, we can concentrate in the moment on spirituality and the true nature of self. Upon arising, we can set a tone for the day. The intent to be at one with the all throughout the day. Upon retiring from the day, we can review the experiences of the day and patiently assess the knowledge gained from the art of living well, whether we've been successful or not in that endeavor. And in between, during the flow of the terrestrial life, in the mundane duties of life, we can endeavor to plant the seeds of the one reality. In the middle of the rush of the duties and the events of life, we can pause and re-anchor mind and ideas to the soul, to the truth within, to the true kingdom of heaven. Universal consciousness as it wells up from within us. Moment by moment, we can create the habit of observing the manner in which we generate ideas, or the way in which we sense ideas from the lower astral. We can ask, am I changing my mind? am I making a decision in this moment, or am I merely reacting? Am I stronger than the mask of the personality I'm using right this moment? Writer and thought leader Herb Kagan recently described the human scenario very, very well. Quote, am I choosing or am I compulsed without any consciousness at all, without any resistance at all, to habitual desires and reflexive action? Am I in motion without any thought of why or reasoning or memory of consequences and past learning? Blavatsky and Judge often wrote on this very point. Am I generating thought with no awareness of universal brotherhood, without an awareness of the oneness or the beingness? Am I generating thought irresponsibly? By endeavoring to remain centered throughout the events of the day, we can create a fresh experience. We can emulate that tiny bead of mercury merging into the host of its own kind. We can set aside old assumptions and belief systems, expectations, attachments, mindless Americanized drivers to be perfect in the personal. We can create self in all capitals, actualizing thought. We can be of that self, relying on the inner to make real the energy from, in, and through the spiritual source that we are. And in this manner, this practice, this process, we become more and more harmonious with great nature and beyond. We tune in to the real nature of both humanity and the greater cosmos. For all is one. Spirit is life and consciousness. Robert Crosby's writings frequently allude to spiritual perception being the language of the soul. Leading the examined life gradually yields the realization that each being lives not just for himself, but for the highest interests of his fellow men. That attitude or point of view opens the floodgates of spiritual knowledge within himself, the Krishna, the Christos, the Buddha within. Powers become available that are far beyond those of the lower conditioned mind. Intuition springs up spontaneously, simultaneously, without the taint of false ideas. The science of right living, no matter how flawed the endeavor, eventually produces the art of right living. And Crosby advises that we have no greater duty to perform to make clean and clear our natures, to make them in accord, to attune them, to recalibrate them to the great object of all life, the evolution of soul. We move along, paddling along from where we are planted, knowing the skandhas at our avail, trusting a universe that moves unerringly under the law of perfect justice, relying absolutely on the law generated by our own spiritual being. knowing that whatever conditions come are necessary for us. Knowing that all powers of all kinds, electrical, dynamic, explosive, come from one universal spirit. Knowing that all of the powers of universal manifestation, of universal consciousness, are latent or potential within each soul. As we practice the meditative process of shaving away the false images of self, as we place faith in the eternal, divest ourselves of illusions of the physical and psychical planes, we can rise above the gunas described in chapter 17 of the Gita. We can rise to the fact that we are truly the changeless self of the whole. That is within the reach of each being's mind. All of the apparent obstacles and limiting conditions become seen for what they truly are. The delusions of false ideas, the delusions of reasoning from false premises, automatic responses to triggers from without, mindlessness. The 24/7 endeavor to turn to the Christos, the Krishna, the Buddha within, to find unity with the Mahatmas as symbols of the universal duty to help and teach others, to generate a process by which the flawed thought is raised to a higher vibration, transmuted. That is to attune with universal consciousness. The Logos is the collectivity of beings of many grades, both visible and invisible, to care for and to care about the welfare of each and all, eliminates the taint of selfishness and creates harmony with the universe. ULT is an exoteric body of the Theosophical movement. It is merely the reflection of the esoteric endeavor, that process hidden within us, to create the nucleus of universal brotherhood. No effort is ever wasted when the motive to create unity and harmony is pure. Solomon said that there is nothing new under the sun. This endeavor is older than time and transcends all limits of imagined time and space. Why? How does it transcend? Because universal mind, universal consciousness, is the sum total of ideas of all beings. Any particularized manifestation of that is merely a degree of the one. The tiny bead of mercury can merge seamlessly with its host of like kind. So can we. Use the power of image maker that you are for the greatest good. In each moment, strive to recreate the reality that is truly ours, that so many have forgotten or are ignorant about. Heal the whole of manifestation, one drop at a time, one moment at a time. As Blavatsky wrote, embodied consciousness gains knowledge through observation and experience. Disembodied consciousness, the universality, is the cause. We are one for all. We are all for one. attune, be at one, always and in all ways. We can indeed attune to the universal consciousness. I'll bet after all month of these considerations, you have arrived this morning to share your own reflections and your own considerations on this very, very potent topic. Any comers? Don't be shy. SL?
Are there any rules, absolute things that we shouldn't do, forbidden to do, or any rules that we must do in order to attune ourselves to universal consciousness? We thought it's peculiar that whenever Arjuna asks Krishna for a specific thing to do, he avoids giving a specific answer.
Indeed. Specificity and rules are not in the pages of the Gita. You know, the Gita ends with the notion of act with what seemeth best to thou. After 18 million years of evolutionary process, each soul has a bank account of karma waiting to come forth again. Some of it's positive, some of it is still capable of teaching lessons. So there's no one size fits all, because we are such variants. We've created this tremendous array of powers and particularization. But there are a couple of guidelines that we're constantly reminded of, and maybe the group can come up with even more. One that comes to mind is that we're not to avoid an act of kindness. If we sense the need, if there's a needy other that needs some practical support at any plane, mental, emotional, physical, we're to give it. We're to be as practical as possible, as active as possible, as mindful as possible, not doing any harm, but empowering the other as best we can. So to avoid the act of kindness, when our conscience says, ooh, there's something to be done here, that's a grave evil. Another admonishment that we're offered is to avoid the sin of separateness.
But I can wear this inside the whole time.
As human beings, you know, we're literally souls seated, enmeshed, inundated in the mud of the terrestrial life. We're using sheaths of physicality of various degrees, visible and invisible. We sense, I mean, this morning on the screen, I can see the eyes of certain others, and many of you are hidden behind neutral little personas. But we sense separateness, but that's an illusion on this plane alone. We are a garden, we are an array of beautiful aspects of oneness. We're like the multicolored light that goes through a prism and comes out. It's white light at its source, goes through the prism, and then is manifested as a diverse array of tremendous color. But we need to identify strongly with the white light, the true source, the oneness, and not be blinded by the array of appearances, the delusions of this particular plane. And so, you know, to be silent and inactive in the face of a duty of service and help to a needy cause, to enmesh ourselves in the illusion and the sin of separateness. These are true no-nos. Did anything else come to mind for any of you when that comment, that query was made? Can you think of any other strong advice ethically that we find in the philosophy? So there's this gradual, natural cycle of light.
And bring the directions, okay?
Turn off the electricity. But we can begin to take the mundane and what we consider natural or just, it's going to happen. And begin to think about it and apply the universal to the mundane of our lives. What would it be like to be very punctual, very methodical, very orderly, very intentioned in our use of mind? What would it be like to follow the path of the sun and plan the activities of our day in consort with the sun? And so we would rise at a particular time, we have particular period of coming into the day of meditation. We might aim at particular time periods, as the earlier comment was, you know, to take mindful gratitude moments before any meal or while we're preparing meals or when we're doing the dreaded dishes thereafter. We could then have periods of exercise and work, periods of play and leisure and recharging, periods of study, periods of collegiality and exchanges with family and friends, family of heart. If we did that in a very mindful fashion, punctual, psychical, and move through the course of the day, the thing, all of the little activities, all that we need to sustain health and wealth in the physical frame, wouldn't be raising that to a natural impulse that we find in great nature. Theosophy Hall.
As the commenter was just speaking, we remember reading somewhere about what life was like before we became so enmeshed in time, and about following how the sun rose up at a certain time, and that's when people woke up. That's when they started their day. And not eating by, oh, it's 12 o'clock, it's time to eat, whether you're hungry or not. And by following nature,